Lately, I can't help but to notice how many people I've been talking to and interacting with who have these grand plans and dreams and hopes for amazing things to happen, except they're coming up with excuses and reasons why it won't end up working out. At Between Dreams, we're about those big dreams, but exploring the reasons and the possibilities and the ways that they are possible. See, big dreams are important and great, but what's really important and what matters is what you do between dreams. We're on a mission to inspire people to get out and make something happen and start now. It isn't about waiting for things to be just right, because nothing will ever be just right. The only thing that matters is the action that you can take right now, starting today. Get out there and make it happen. Today's guest is somebody who's out there making it happen. He's a full-time performer through magic and storytelling, and also a podcast host. We are about to get into our conversation with Taylor Hughes. If you enjoy this while you're listening, remember that you can continue the conversation. We go even deeper only on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/betweendreams, you can get access to our bonus conversation where we dig deeper. And as always, check out betweendreamsclothing.com to catch things like t-shirts, books that I've written. Just Go is the one that you won't be looking for if you're thinking about making something happen but you're not sure how to start. It's just about getting started, doing what you can right now, today. Just go. Buy the book. Grab a t-shirt. Okay, let's get into the chat. This is Taylor Hughes.
Thanks for having me.
And you are a magician and storyteller, and you travel around performing for people and making people smile. Now,
that's the goal.
The interesting thing is most comedy magicians go out and buy tricks. Spoiler alert, you can just go buy tricks, guys.
You can. Well, jugglers, I mean, you juggle. That's always been the big thing, is that jugglers have to like actually have a talent.
You have to learn how to do something. So most magicians, the reality is most, especially comedy magicians, go out and buy a bunch of gimmicky tricks and then go directly on stage and perform them and then wonder why they are doing like bad shows that don't get paid very well in bad settings, in, you know, not like the epic things that we want to see. What made you decide to not, so that's easier?
Yes.
In the short term.
Yes.
Being good and putting thought into your stuff is harder because people, you need to explain what it is. What made you decide to make it harder?
That's a good question. I have this love-hate relationship with magic. I've been in love with the art of magic since I was a kid. And for years, I did the same thing. You know, one of the things with magic is you can go into a magic shop and they don't just sell you the prop, but they sell you the prop, the trick that the prop does, and then literally give you a script of say these words while you do it. And so what most of us learned to do growing up was you just say the words that they tell you to say when you buy the instructions. And what's sad is that sometimes magicians, not only do they fail sometimes with that, but what's even scarier is sometimes they succeed with it, because most audiences don't know the difference or don't see a lot of magic, you know. I just wanted to do something different. I wanted to do something that I cared about, you know, like you get to a point where you're performing and then you just go, it's not fun to do if you're just carbon copying someone else, you know?
Yeah. But then now I'm thinking that becomes, so what we do and what everyone does, whether you're a performer or not, is a lot of times it becomes routine.
Oh yeah.
So even if you're being innovative and have the most innovative show ever, that becomes a routine for you, even if it's fresh for the audience. How do you keep that now? For you, you're like creating something new that, you know, through storytelling and through connecting with emotional things, I feel like is a good way to explain your thing. You're really connecting with emotions and connecting with the audience through that more than just a trick. You know, the trick is kind of a bonus, I feel like, in your show. And that's always what I wanted think about. I think about my show that same way too. Like I've talked about this before where I tell people like I don't care about juggling. Even though like I've spent my whole life becoming good at it. Now the goal is to forget about the juggling and I want people to leave like, "Whoa."
Yeah.
What happened? I don't know, he was doing crazy stuff, but I want people to say like, "Whoa," at the end, not like, "Oh, that was good juggling."
I think that's a key that you just brought up that a lot of people don't think about is we think I'm going to go on stage and I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that rather than what is the audience going to leave with? You know, when they walk out of the room, do you want them to think about their life differently? Do you want them to go, "Wow, that was the funniest thing I ever saw"? Do you want them to just be amazed by the magic? I think those kind of questions will lead to discovering new types of performance.
And that went right into performance, but I think that's in anything, any business or relationship or friendship or whatever, is like what you're saying is reverse engineer instead of go straight on. So start with the goal or start with what the end result is and figure out a way to get there instead of if you have this thing of whatever, I'm trying to think of, so it's not just a magic variety show thing. Whatever it is, if you want to like sell T-shirts or something, and because that's a world that I'm slightly getting into a little bit more. So it's like I could say, "Oh, I want this T-shirt to be like this, and this T-shirt to be like this," and then it's about me. It's like what I want because I wanted to go to the magic store and buy this trick, and then I post them online and no one buys them. What happens when performers buy things and go out and try to fit that mold that is more for them.
Right,
where it's harder to create it's harder up front to create like a community or something. Then people want to buy the T-shirts, or you create a better story or a better performance, so people want to come see you.
Right. Yeah. I think very few people think about the audience when they're designing what they do. And then they go, "Well, I'm not working." Well, you're trying to work corporates and you cuss a lot on stage. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's like you're not going to work corporate. So you've got to design everything you do around the people that you want to present it to, because ultimately, you know, art is subjective, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you want to work kid shows, you got to do stuff kids like. If you want to do corporate, you got to do stuff that works for corporates. If you want to do theater shows, you got to know what a theater audience is looking for and let that drive it, not just "I'd like to do this kind of show," you know?
How do you keep that show? I think everyone does want to do that. How do you keep it fresh when you're doing these, especially like storytelling or something? I found that so it has to add a little bit of kind of stories, backstories into mine. So there's a reason for the juggling and things like that. And sometimes I get on stage and realize that I'm saying words.
Just getting the script.
I need to get to the end of these words so that I can get to the juggling, so that I can get to the end of the juggling instead of being in that moment and kind of playing with the audience and bringing it back. How do you keep every performance fresh? You know, now we're both coming up soon on doing a whole big run of shows at a park. You know, a week-long thing, multiple shows a day, where that does sometimes get, we need to just get to the end of this day. How do you keep it fresh for the audience who, because the reminder is there is an audience who's only there once.
Right.
And maybe the only variety show or magic show that they're seeing all year or their whole life.
Yeah.
So it's not just get to the end of this sentence. That's a half hour or an hour of their life that they really could remember forever.
Yeah. Well, I think you just nailed it, man. It goes back to, are you thinking about the person who's listening? Because if I think about, "Well, I don't feel like it today. I don't feel like performing," then I can get in my head and I can just be like, go through the motions. But if I think about that person who's in the audience, this may be the only show like this they ever see. They may have just had a really crappy news right before they walked in. And I want, for at least this moment, not to have them worry about anything. I want them to enjoy themselves, you know? So when you kind of put yourself in their position and say, "Hey, I may have said this 1,000 times, but they've never heard it. I want to tell it like it's brand new." I think that that's a good perspective. And then I also think like you have to switch up your show. I mean, I'm notorious. My wife laughs at me because I'm always working on some new thing, or like, I'll have something that gets a good reaction because I've done it for 6 months and I'm like, "Well, I got to stop doing it because it doesn't feel fresh anymore," you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where I'm at with that. Yeah. Because I think most guys just hone and act, and then when they're in their 50s, they're still doing a version of that act.
Right.
And I feel like, man, what if variety artists did what comics do, where you write an hour, you do it, and then you get rid of it. So I'm kind of like toying with that idea. It scares me to death, but I'm actually thinking about just putting out everything I'm doing right now and then doing new stuff.
Yeah. In Scott's The Booby Trap podcast, Michael Rayner was just talking about that, and Scott asked a similar question of how do you keep it fresh?
Yeah.
And because Michael get up and just yell about whatever was frustrating
whatever
him
that
day.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, the kids did this, or the wife is at this, or this show, and his famous one is that he got canceled and replaced by the reptile show. And I love that. And he talked about it, and he says the same thing, and he talked a little bit about that on this podcast, too, of just using that week's stuff. And if he tries to recycle that the next week, it doesn't work because he's just it's not real.
Yeah.
And there's something in that just to stay fresh and if only for yourself to be excited about it.
See, and this talking about the original stuff and not just doing the stock lines or the things, like guys will tell a joke and they think, oh, I'm killing, and they're getting laughs, but it's someone else's line. And it's like, well, you didn't get the laughs. Whoever wrote that in the 60s got the laugh. You know what I mean? They're laughing at your vanishing bandana or whatever it is. Right. There's like, this not, that's not yours. So I feel like that's another way to keep it fresh is like Michael does. He gets up, and I think he was saying on Scott's podcast, like, you know, he's got an outline of what he's going to do. At the end of the day, he's going to juggle a cheeseburger on a parasol. But everything leading up to that is up for grabs, and it's based on what happened to him that day or what happened to an audience member that he doesn't even know going into it. It's a lot of improv, and I think that probably keeps it fresh when you're doing the same, you know, trick or juggling bit or whatever.
Yeah, I was just, we were just talking about this. Just shout out to all the other podcasts that are out there. I was on the Monday Club podcast last week or so, and we referenced an interview from my podcast, which we're coming back to now, with Sean Emery, who is a legendary juggler, variety show guy. And what my favorite line, what resonates from when I talked to him, was he knows it was a good show when he looks over at his prop table and sees props left there that he didn't get to.
Yes.
Because he was so connected with the audience that he ran out of time to do the juggling stuff.
Oh, yeah. I forget what comic said it, but he's like, it may have been a Seinfeld thing. No, it wouldn't have been Seinfeld. But it's like basically said, like, your act is the thing you do when you can't think of anything else.
Yeah.
Like, go on stage just because you plan to do, you know, these five effects or whatever. You don't have to do it. Sometimes the best shows are the ones where someone brought something up and you spent 8 minutes just going off on that.
Yeah.
You know? Michael Rayner is probably the best example of that.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And that was the resonating thing from Sean Emery was he said he asks his wife sometimes if she's watching the show, how'd that feel? And then she says sometimes she'll say, it felt a little juggly. And the same thing of like, hey, you're worried about the juggling too much, and you're disconnected. If you're worrying about juggling, you're not thinking about anything else by nature of what juggling is. Like, you're not, you can't see anyone else. You can't, you know, your brain is 100% there. Same thing with if you're worried about the, you know, the sleight of hand move.
Right.
Or if you're worried about whatever it is, if you're worried about the t-shirt design, you know, the technical thing or whatever it is. If you're starting a podcast and all you're worried about the whole time is the dials and all this, like, the thing's not going to be good. So, like, whatever it is, don't be too juggly. What's your too juggly? And whatever it is, we all worry about these things that, like, only we care about.
It's true. And juggling and magic have this kind of weird thing where it's a world no one really gets or understands or knows about. So if you focus too much on the aspects of magic or the aspects of juggling, by nature, it disconnects people because it's like they don't know anything about card tricks or about how to, you know, juggle five clubs or whatever. Like, so if you make it all about that rather than the people that are on stage or, you know, what led you to discover this moment.
Yeah. And the lesson in that for me recently was I recently did like the highest paid gig that I've ever done.
Yeah.
And the
that's a good thing.
The good or bad, maybe. Yeah.
Let me guess. It wasn't the most soul fulfilling show.
It was great.
Done. Okay.
But the point was that I didn't do any more than three objects in anything. I did like three balls. My ball routine was three balls. My club routine was three clubs, three boxes.
Yeah.
You know, there was no not even five balls, which I can do five balls, right. But I chose not to.
Yeah.
And that's a thing of, I know a lot of people, most people aren't worried about how many balls they're going to juggle at their show, but they're like, well, when I'm ready, I can't go on stage as a professional juggler, like charging a proper professional rate if I can't juggle five balls. And it was like, I chose to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And people were like, that was awesome. And because I didn't, if I do five balls, I have to think about juggling five balls and concentrate. If I do three balls, I can be like,
Right.
I can do it in my sleep. And now I can connect back to the things. Exactly. Or I'll drop stuff and it's like, oh, okay, well, whatever. It wasn't about me being a robot on stage.
Well, this goes back to most people. Like, I mean, they don't know. They don't know the difference of how hard three versus four versus seven is. Like, to them, they can't do any of it, you know? So I had a friend the other day. I was getting stuck in my head about wanting to put out some more storytelling videos, and my head was all wrapped around the magic trick. And like, oh, the trick has to be original. And if it's not original enough, then... And my buddy's like, dude, the story is what's original.
Yeah.
He's like... To you, you spend your whole life around magic. What's only a level two to you is like a level nine to most people, because we don't spend all day geeking out over magic tricks. So, yeah, don't focus so much on like the skill stuff. Ultimately, are you entertaining people? Are you engaging them? Are they involved in it, or are they just observing? And then it's like, yeah, I can watch anything else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so you also have a good balance of other things. So I feel like some people just go into this, whatever they're doing, performance or whatever, and just all in, and then after a few years, burned out, and then like walk away from it.
Yeah.
And I think you have a couple things that are happening that, for me, that I see that as, for the same thing for me, is like, I have to do stuff like this to keep where I don't get burned out. So you have, in addition to traveling with your show, you also host a podcast.
I do.
Which I was on.
Yes. It was fantastic. It was a great episode.
So check out that podcast.
Should we tell them
after
what it's
you
called,
listen
or...
to this? The podcast is called About to Break, and it's a bit of a new spin. All the people that have podcasts create their own little spin, and yours is a cool spin of this, like, kind of like balanced of good and bad, which is a cool, instead of just like bragging, which is some of them are. Or mine, which is like, yeah, everything's awesome. God, you'll be all right.
I think it's a good, for us as artists, because you look at everybody doing great. You know, everything we have to put the good stuff on social media for business. Like, you have to. But the product of that is we all feel crappy all the time because it seems like everyone else is doing more. So, yeah, that's, we just talk about the ups and downs, the good stuff, and also some horror stories.
Cool. Yeah. And now you just talked to me about, before we started recording, you talked to me about the new show that you are creating. And we don't need to go into specific details about that, but just as a general thing of like, that's something that a lot of people don't do because it's a really risky, you have to sell tickets. Like, most of us are just like, oh, we'll just go somewhere, they pay us.
Right.
We'll do this thing. To put your neck out and start a show that you're responsible for selling tickets, and you're probably responsible for marketing, and you're responsible for setting up the thing when you get there, and all these things that at the end of the day, like, you're like, well, I don't really want to do all this myself, maybe, like most of us. I'm like, it would be nice if this was kind of done, but again, you're taking the more challenging route up front. There is a step that you have to go over to make that happen, but then on the other side of that is a reward of like, oh, you have your own show that people love, and it looks cool. You're showing me the stage setup, it like looks really cool, it looks like a proper thing. So the question from before was like, why do you choose to make it harder? Same thing for this. Like yeah. with all these things that are, you know, you built a shed in your yard that is a podcast studio. Yeah. Like it would be, you know, that it's awesome now, but I'm sure there was challenges when doing that when you were like, well, I could just do it inside.
Yeah, man. I mean, that came about because I got, a wonderful wife and two daughters that are entering now like 10 and 12 years old, and I couldn't just kick them out of the house whenever I needed to record a podcast or yeah. needed to have a business call. So it's just getting creative and going, I'd love to have my own office or studio. I can't afford to rent one. I'll build one out of a shed in my backyard. And it became pretty rad, you know? Yeah. And I want to do a show in my hometown and there's not really any venues. Well, we'll just create a pop-up venue. Mm. It's the same thing. Like, I mean,
well,
this
you
with
just
podcasting.
Say that though. Like, I'll just build a shed, or I'll just create a pop up venue yeah. at the thing and do a show.
Yeah,
people listening to this are sitting there and be like, especially if they're not in like Los Angeles or a big city, where they're like, I understand that that's easy. Somebody right now was like, well, yeah, it's easy for you to say you have all this stuff, but like, and I know from doing
right.
a lot of the
oh,
similar
yeah.
stuff of like when it's done, I'm like, yeah. Just go do it. But right. I know before I do it, I'm like, well, is this gonna waste? Like, am I just wasting a week of work? And
yeah.
I'm gonna spend a bunch of money.
Yeah.
So let's dig into that because that's the thing. And I, you know, my book is called Just Go, which is
yeah.
the same
oh, yeah.
thing. Of you just make
do
the show.
Something. Yeah.
But I know that's really hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So somebody wants to do that. What? Dig into that a little bit, like, because that was yeah. a decision. You had to make that decision, like, do I invest this time and money into creating this pop-up show where you have to book acts and you have to make the stage and
yeah.
the lights and all this stuff? Where does that, how do you, when those doubts come in, if you're like, should I do this? Is this right? How do you know, yeah, this is the thing to jump into?
Yeah, I've failed at so many different projects. I have an entire list of things that were great ideas that ended up just costing me money. And at some point, you have to try things. I feel like a lot of people live with either the regret that I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have given it a go, or they live with the anxiety of, I want to do it. I feel like I could do it, but I don't have the resources. Mm. And this whole idea of like expecting, look, there is no more going on the Tonight Show and you're a star the next day. Like, mm. you could go on the Tonight Show today and it's not going to mean anything tomorrow. So if you want an opportunity, you got to make an opportunity.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a theater show that people cared to come to see. I just made one. I wanted to host a show. Nobody was asking me to. I started a podcast and made myself the host. Like,
yeah.
I feel like we live with excuses of, I don't have the resource, or I don't know how. It's like, look, guys, everything's on YouTube. Like, I didn't know how to build a building. Like, I built a building in my backyard to make a podcast. It was literally watching YouTube video on how to do this, and then how do I make the walls, and then how do I run electrical? And we had smart people make sure it was safe. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
We can't allow, like, this idea of, oh, I'm not capable. Like, you could do anything you want to do.
Yeah.
I think we talked about people who say they can't, you and I talked about this on my podcast, people who say they can't cook, and it's like, well, you're saying you can't follow directions. Like,
yeah, yeah. My
the
thing
information
was,
is out there.
Yeah, yeah. And my thing was on the cooking thing. I've gone back to this a bunch, is when people, if anyone is like, how do you cook? Like, I don't know how to cook. I could never do this. And I'm like, you're making ingredients hot. Buy ingredients.
Yeah.
You can do
oh,
that.
Yeah. But it's sad. People
make them hot. You can
people,
do that.
People
too.
Really have this mindset though of they're not capable, or they can't do it as well as someone else. And it's like, well, everybody who's great at something used to suck at it.
Yeah.
Like, Adele had a crappy junior high talent show. I'm sure of it. She's amazing. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, you just got to go out and do it. And if you don't want to go out and do
it, probably a
crappy
arena show recently. Like,
oh, yeah.
in her mind, she's probably like, oh, that.
Yeah,
oh,
buddy.
Oops. You know, it's never like, oh, I crossed that thing now everything's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your book, Just Go, like, it's do something or stop complaining that you don't have any opportunities.
Yeah. And, and on the side of the YouTube tutorial thing as well, like, it's, you know, whatever, people are like, oh, YouTube is bad.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can learn how to start a podcast, which is the same thing. I like this the whole thing.
Yeah.
You can learn how to build a shed. You can learn how to like I wanted to write the book.
Yeah.
There's no publisher. I don't know any publishers.
Right.
I can wait 3 years.
Yeah. Try to get a book
of
deal.
Getting someone to give me, you know, to not give me an advance to write the book, because that's
right.
like kind of what the deal is these days.
Right.
Like, unless you're somebody. So I literally watched Adobe InDesign tutorials on YouTube, and I was like, because I was like, I don't know how to make page numbers. And that was something I was like, because it's not in InDesign, like it's overly complex. It's like Photoshop. Sometimes you just like to add text onto a thing, like it's harder than it should be.
Right,
like an app will do it real easy, but
totally.
Like Photoshop is too smart.
Yeah.
InDesign is the same thing. And I was like frustrated. I was like, I don't know how to make the page numbers, but I don't want it to start on like the first table of contents. I want it to start here. And it was all these things. And I was like, I'm just going to hire somebody because I don't know how to do the page numbers. And it was something looking back, you're like, well, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
But it was a real doubt, a real thing. I was like, this is hard.
Yeah, but you did it, and now you know how to do it.
Yeah, now I know how to do it. And it was like, I just watched some girl on YouTube was like, all right, so here's how you do the page numbers, and I know you're not going to want them to start on one on the table of contents. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
did you like it's like you could literally type in the exact thing and have it happen. So that's the lesson of that is make something happen, and there's you're going to hit hurdles and all these obstacles, and just like you want to start a show. I was like, I want to be a host too.
Yeah.
But I was like, I decided to, instead of spend all my days going to auditions where people can tell me no, I can do it here.
Yeah.
And I've got everything I need. Like there's a camera and microphones and distribution on the internet.
It's crazy. Like the ceiling's gone. Like when it comes to what you can accomplish at home, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like, I just feel like there's no excuses anymore. Like if you want to do it, do it.
Yeah.
How cool is that? You may not have a million people listening tomorrow, but you will definitely not have a million people if you don't make anything for them to hear.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, we are just about wrapping up. That was a
quick
one.
We did it, guys.
We're wrapping up on our podcast version, but as you guys know, on Patreon, for our one of our rewards on Patreon is bonus material. So we're going to get to the bonus material. If you want to go listen to us talk more, go to Patreon, find out all the info there. But before we get to that, we end the episode with the memeable minute.
Memeable minute!
Ding, 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 ding. We need a sound effect.
I know, right?
So
fire.
If you could wrap Dragon. Up all of your... We need a green screen, too.
Right?
If you could wrap up your thoughts in something, somebody that maybe, so this is for somebody who wants, they have this idea, they have this thing, but they're like, I don't know where to start. I don't know where they're just stuck. They feel like if they just had one little boost to make it happen, what would your words of wisdom be for them to boost in the memeable minute? You have 1 minute.
1 minute.
Starting now.
Of how to help creative folks accomplish things. That's probably it. Like, I feel like a lot of people use the excuse of like, I'm creative, so I'm not good at details, so I have a hard time getting the ideas out of my head and into the world. Just pick one of them. Pick one idea. Don't worry about judging it. Don't worry about it being the perfect idea ever. Just do it. Like, grab something in your brain and say, today I'm going to make this thing happen. And then what's great is you have something. You have a thing. You've made it. And you go, here's my, look at this thing I made. I have a friend, Eddie, who is like, he's like, dude, there's 3 Beverly Hills Chihuahuas movies. They're not good movies. They're awful, but there's 3 of them. And 2 blocks away in Studio City, there's some hipster who wrote the best screenplay. But it's half done, so it's not going to get done. So you got to just make it. Make it, finish it, and you'll have your own Beverly Hills Chihuahua.
That's it.
Was that memeable?
That was memeable minute. All right. Thank you for listening, and we're going to keep the conversation rolling. So head over to patreon.com/betweendreams and figure out how you can listen to us and watch us talk more. Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy this episode? Head over to patreon.com/betweendreams and find out how you can hear more bonus content exclusively when you join the Patreon family. See, we need your help. we make these podcasts. And if you're just listening, you can also watch these interviews. Go over to my personal YouTube channel, Chris Ruggiero, and you can see the videos as well. And we need your help so we can create more content to inspire, motivate, and change more lives. Our goal right now, we are on a mission to be able to create daily content. And in order to do that, we need a couple bucks. And you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/betweendreams. Donating there to see the bonus content. And if you want to really become part of the family, head over to betweendreamsclothing.com. Grab a t-shirt or a book or another one of the cool things we have over on the site. And every single dollar that comes in is put directly into creating content like this, and videos and photos and audio to help inspire people like you to get out there and stop dreaming. Start living. Thank you. Goodbye.